Hey, superhero fans, this is Diedrich Bader, the voice of Guy Gardner, Kraven the Hunter, and Batman. And you're listening to Comic Book Central, where comic books come to life.
Hey there, all you wonder guys and gals out there. Welcome to Comic Book Central, where comic books come to life. I'm your host, Joe Stuber, coming at you with yet another super cool comic book conversation. This week, the Dark Knight is headed straight from the Batcave to the Comic Book Central lair. Actually, he's kind of more Light Knight than Dark Knight. From the quirky and cool animated series Batman Brave and the Bold, Batman himself, Diedrich Bader, he's going to be along in just a few minutes. Tremendous actor, voiceover artist, lot to chat about with Diedrich today. First, man, I hope you are having a wonderful Wonder Woman week. Man, it is finally here. The live-action flick starring Gal Gadot as the Amazonian princess premiered this weekend. I'm going to be seeing it here shortly. If you've seen it already, I hope you enjoyed it. I hope you had a fun time watching Wonder Woman. And if you want more Wonder Woman goodness, look no further than Comic Book Central. Now, some of you longtime listeners out there, you've probably heard my past Wonder Woman-themed interviews, but if you're new to the show, first, welcome. Always glad to have new folks hanging out in the lair with us. But those past Wonder Woman interviews, you can find them in the archive at the website, comicbookcentral.net. I've also been reposting them this week on the Comic Book Central Facebook page and the Twitter feed. It's facebook.com/comicbookcentralnetwork. Don't forget the network. Twitter, it's at comicbookctrl. So you've got the archive at the website. iTunes, subscribe on iTunes if you haven't already. You get all the episodes that way. Again, Facebook, Twitter. Links to the show on iTunes, Facebook, and Twitter. They can all be found on the website. Blueberry, Stitcher, you can find the episodes there as well. So they're there in the archive, all those different places. Here they are by number if you want to go back and check them out. Episode 43, Shannon Farnan, the voice of Wonder Woman from Super Friends. Episode 78, Kathy Lee Crosby, TV's first live-action Wonder Woman. Yep. Right before Linda Carter was Kathy Lee Crosby. Episode 157, Wonder Woman writer Stephen Kandel. Stephen wrote those very cool alien episodes with Andros from the Linda Carter series, as well as the episode that brought Wonder Woman from the 40s to the 70s in season 2 of the show. So he wrote all those episodes. And from the current Wonder Woman movie that we mentioned and the upcoming Justice League movie, the wonderful actress who plays Yubia in those films, Samantha Jo, she joined me on episode 165. So there you have it. A lot of Wonder Woman goodness right here on Comic Book Central. If you just need some more Wonder Woman after you see the film, it's all out there. So after you listen to today's show, if you haven't already, go back and check those episodes out in the archive. All right, kids, today I'm going to be chatting with one of DC Comics' other heavy hitters. That would be Batman. I'm going to hack into the back computer, get some intel on my special guest. Yeah, that's right. I can hack the back computer from in here. Check this out. And then I'm going to sit down for a bat chat with Diedrich Bader. Diedrich was born in the U.S., Virginia specifically, but he spent several of his childhood years overseas when his family moved to France. A return to the States eventually led to an acting and a move to the West Coast, where Diedrich scored roles in TV movies and guest spots on shows like Cheers, Quantum Leap, and Star Trek The Next Generation. In 1993, fans of classic TV shows turned into movies got to see Diedrich as Jethro Bodine in the feature film version of The Beverly Hillbillies. And not long after, he began what would turn into a 9-season run on the wildly successful ABC sitcom The Drew Carey Show. It was during this time that Diedrich also started perfecting his skills as a voice actor, quickly becoming one of the go-to performers in the biz and racking up some major superhero and supervillain cred over the years. DC's Guy Gardner from Green Lantern, the animated series.
Hey, you really should check your facts. I am the only Green Lantern of...
Green Lantern of... Hey, better get back there. As for Earth, when trouble calls, Guy Gardner picks up.
Booster Gold from Justice League Action.
Today, I'm going for the gold. You get it?
Booster Gold.
Marvel's Sergei Kravenoff, a.k.a. Kraven the Hunter from Ultimate Spider-Man.
I am Kraven the Hunter. What I hunt, I consume. What I consume, I become.
Huh?
In The Zeta Project, a futuristic sci-fi spin-off of the animated series Batman Beyond, Diedrich portrays a robot built by the government as an assassin that ultimately develops a conscience. And in a more direct connection to Batman, he got to play the Caped Crusader himself in Batman: The Brave and the Bold. This decidedly different take on the Dark Knight detective was much more lighthearted than Batman the Animated Series. These team-up tales based on the classic DC comic are part epic adventure, part Looney Tunes, and some good old-fashioned Adam West-style camp thrown in for good measure. Batman even teams up with Scooby-Doo and the gang for one episode, believe it or not. The show constantly broke the fourth wall, especially in the episodes featuring Batmite, played by Pee-wee Herman himself, Paul Reubens. This was never more evident than in the show's brilliant final episode, written by Batman the Animated Series' Paul Dini, where Batmite tries to get the show canceled to usher in a darker Batman series. Now, if you're a fan of comic book in-jokes and Jump the Shark references, this episode's got them. It's even got original Happy Days shark jumper Henry Winkler and a surprisingly moving final speech delivered to perfection by Diedrich. Now, DC Universe, Marvel Universe, hero, villain, my guest today, he can do it all. You can see him on the ABC sitcom American Housewife, and you are going to hear from him right now. A big bat welcome to Diedrich Bader. Diedrich, welcome to Comic Book Central.
Thank you very much. I feel very welcome.
Hey, first off, congratulations are in order, definitely in order. A few weeks ago, ABC announced a second season for American Housewife, so congrats on that.
Thank you very much. I'm incredibly excited about it.
Always good to have a pickup for a series. Always good to,
Oh, yeah, it's amazing. Yes. Also, I'm having such a good time doing the show that it's like, it's just a dream come true.
Do you like live action or do you like voiceover better? Or is it just like you like it for whatever is going on?
Up until this show, up until American Housewife, I've enjoyed voiceover more, but I really enjoy doing American Housewife. So they're kind of neck and neck right now. I mean, I love the incredible talent I get to work with on voiceover, and I love the ease and convenience of going in, you know, wearing whatever you want, not having to shave. But, but you know, when you get to work with somebody like Katie Mixon and the rest of the cast on American Housewife, it's just a pure joy. So, you know, I'm mixed right now.
This is your first time playing a sitcom dad, right?
This is my first time playing a dad, yeah.
Okay.
And I'm loving it.
Who were your sitcom dad inspirations for Greg Otto?
Not Cleaver, I'll tell you that much. not Mr. Cleaver, I can't remember his last name. You know, I don't know. I think really I just draw from my own life and my reactions. I mean, this character is as close to me as I've ever played any character. So I can't think of anybody that would be an inspiration for this part other than my twisted, furbile brain.
How about going back into your past then? What kind of kid were you growing up? You grew up overseas, right? You didn't grow up here in the States.
Well, I grew up some of it overseas. I moved there when in Paris, Paris, France, when I was like around three, somewhere a little before that, and back when I was seven. So it wasn't like an incredibly long period of time, although it was formative. But then we lived in the States. I would say, I was kind of a self-reliant kid. I really kind of kept myself to myself and kind of created my own little universe, which helps with the voiceover world because it's like playing, you know, you have to create a universe in your head and pretend that all these things are happening around you. It's really like playing in the backyard.
What kind of cartoons did you watch growing up? And did you sort of take note of, you know, like people like Mel Blanc and you're like, oh, it's one guy doing all kinds of things.
I was totally blown away by Mel Blanc when I was a kid. But I would say, you know, oddly enough, for a guy that got into voiceover, my favorite was the Pink Panther. I remember one day when my mom...
He doesn't have a voice. Wait, Pink Panther doesn't have a...
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. That's precisely what I'm saying. I remember the one day that my mom didn't wake me up for Pink Panther, and I got really, really upset, like hysterically upset because I missed an episode. And those were in the days before, you know, videotapes and TiVo and the DVR and all that.
You missed it,
no,
if it was gone, it was gone, right?
Yeah, it was just gone forever. I love the old guys that did Hanna-Barbera stuff. And I also, I loved Aquaman a lot and Speed Racer. And in my area and in very few other areas I found, there was an animated show which I liked an awful lot, which wasn't all over the States, called Marine Boy. Did you ever see Marine Boy?
I have not seen Marine Boy. What is that? It sounds like you had like an Aqua thing going. So, I mean, was this?
Yeah, right, exactly. It was the same studio as, well, at least same animation style, I should say. I can't specifically say what studio it was. As Speed Racer. It was also a Japanese, cartoon.
Okay.
About a boy who kind of like, he would chew aqua gum so that he could breathe underwater. And he had little motors in the bottom of his shoes, which propelled them all over the ocean. And nice. I just thought that was the coolest thing ever. Nice. I love the practicality of it. Like, you know, it's not superpowers. It's that, you know, he can do that because of this. I like that. It's all like Batman.
Were there early acting influences? I mean, there's the cartoon stuff, but were there influences that kind of geared you toward acting, and how did that sort of manifest itself, and in what age?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I was totally inspired by Charlie Chaplin. That was he's probably the most influential person in my entire life, really. I saw him when I used to love silent movies when I was really little, and I got really addicted to watching Charlie Chaplin. I worked up a little Charlie Chaplin act. And then when the film burned one day, I jumped in between the screen and the audience, and I did my little Charlie Chaplin act, and the organ player played, and that was kind of it.
You get that instant gratification from the crowd, that instant reaction.
Totally. That's why the Drew Carey show was so great for me, because it was like the crowd reaction immediately.
Okay. So, and on the Drew Carey show too, I mean, you actually did improv shows, but like how much improv kind of went in, or were you pretty tight to the scripts that were there?
Oh, you know, we did a lot of improv during the week on the Drew Carey show. They would add some lines here or there. We would pitch to writers. You know, first we would do as is, and then we would pitch like different lines that we came up with during rehearsal. But yeah, by the time we were shooting, maybe a couple of lines would be improvised, but not very many, except for the improv show where we improvised a lot of it. You know, I don't know if you remember that, but they used to ring a bell, and then we had to come up with different lines. But yeah, that was really fun, though.
What were some of your early gigs? I mean, did you do theater? Did you do improv classes? Like, how did you sort of get that thinking on your feet thing?
Theater. I was trained to do theater. I guess we had some improv classes. I went to North Carolina School of the Arts in Winston-Salem. And we had some improv classes, but I wouldn't say that it was heavily focused on that. It was more focused on getting closer to like who your character was through improvisation. So using it as a rehearsal technique in order to find different motivations. So I wasn't really trained to do it comedically. I just kind of got thrown into the situation, you know, because Ryan Stiles is a genius and would drag us down to Santa Monica to improvise with Second City. It was a little like, you know, trying to run in the Olympics, like right from the start. But then Drew really got interested in it, and it just sort of like it took its own sort of steam. And sort of became a thing. But it was really cool. I did enjoy it. It was very different. But no, I was trained to be an actor, so it was more like trying to make lines that other people wrote sound like I'm making them up, rather than making up lines.
What got you to the West Coast initially?
I did a pilot in Santa Fe, New Mexico. I had no intention of doing on-camera work at all, but I was in Santa Fe on vacation with my parents, and we met a casting director at a dinner party for local artists, and she just said, as an experience, why don't you come in and read for me? And so I was like, I'm a stage actor. And she said, just for the experience. And I was like, no. So I read for her as a small part. And she said, oh, that was really funny. And I said, thank you. And she goes, but the problem was it wasn't a funny role. And I was like, oh, okay. And she goes, but there is a comedic role, and you're sort of naturally funny. And I went, no, I'm a dramatic actor. And she went, why don't you just read for this? So I read for a part that was a regular on this Western, and the producers had to come out and cast it and everything, but I ended up getting cast in it. And then, you know, all of my dreams sort of shifted, because I really intended on being a stage actor, but then once I got to dress up like a cowboy and ride around on a horse and wear a star and play with guns all day, I really thought, oh, well, maybe I'm going in the wrong direction here. And so I went back to School of the Arts for a brief time, but then I just thought, I'm ready to start. And so I moved to Los Angeles.
Nice. And then, well, here on the show, we're celebrating 30 years of Star Trek The Next Generation this year. That was one of your first acting gigs, right?
Absolutely, yeah. It was shortly after my second pilot, and I was dead broke and really starving and those guys were just great. They're really nice cast and really, really professional. And I got to eat, which was fantastic. and we got attacked by Klingons, which was really, really fun.
So and I
got
to hurl myself across.
I did. I had lines, yeah. But the great thing was that I got attacked by Klingons. That was like the dream of a lifetime.
I love watching this thing and like watching you, like you say your line, and then you have to do stuff. Because it's not like you're battling. You have to push buttons and fire phasers. So
yeah,
it's always
yeah,
fun
exactly,
watching you
yeah.
in the background. Because you're kind of like in the episode, you're where Worf usually stands. And
yeah. Right. That was the only reason I was cast. Worf had to pretend that he was captain.
Right, right. And yeah, and you're yeah. like with your side. Like, how tall are you?
6'2".
Okay, yeah. So you feel that space pretty well, too. How much of a challenge was that for an actor to like actually look like you were doing something on the bridge of the Enterprise? Between
oh, no,
your lines?
That was actually super easy. Yeah, you just have to push a bunch of different things. I mean, some actors would have specified what everything was, but I'm not that type. I just, if it looks good, that's fine by me. So I just pushed a bunch of different things, random things, pretending that they were actually doing something. You know, probably what a lot of the actors do on sci-fi stuff, where they just push random things. Beep, boop, beep, beep, boop. Yep, I got it.
It just looks like you're myself. So intense, though. Like, you're actually, like, firing the phasers. As, you know, it's
oh,
just...
totally, yeah. Completely focused.
Were you a Trek Absolutely. Fan when you got the gig?
Oh, yeah, totally. No, I hadn't seen Voyager. Well, that's not entirely true. Now that I remember it. My cousin, who lived out here in Los Angeles, I briefly, like, for 2 weeks, lived with my uncle and aunt, and my cousin was still there. And so I watched Star Trek The Next Generation with him. That was his favorite show. And actually, one of the thrills of getting on the show was that so I got to watch the show with Ned, my cousin Ned Bader, and that was kind of fun.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's one of the best gigs to get into initially. Look, I know we're a little tight on time today, and I definitely want to get to the voiceover work before we get to The Dark Knight, though. Or even The Bright Knight, I guess, closer to your version,
yeah.
closer to the Adam West version. I've got to ask you about Zeta Project.
Yeah.
Two seasons of that. So that was before Batman. How do you sort of approach that role? Because it sort of melds like all the best of sci-fi. I mean, you've got like, you know, Short Circuit, Iron Giant. There's like all these great stories of the robot getting a conscience. How do you kind of approach that? Had you done... a lot of voice work coming up into that, correct? I mean, you had started getting into that.
Yeah, but I was never a regular. I did a lot of guest spots, but never a regular. So as a regular, you have to chart out, because it's not finite, it's continuing. So you have to chart out where you're going ultimately. And the good thing is that the writer, Bob Goodman, really knew where he was going and what he wanted. Really nice, nice man, great writer. So he really knew where he was going with that. And Andrea Romano, the casting director, kind of put us in a way to make it as realistic as possible, to act it as much as we would as if it were really happening, rather than trying to be sort of over the top about it, because it was more of a straightforward action show rather than like a cartoony show. But yeah, I mean, it's an interesting idea, this idea of what makes consciousness and what makes a living human being, or a sentient being. And that's sort of the conundrum of most AI stories, but I thought it was well done in our show. Yeah, I'm happy with that show, and it's just come out on DVD, I think.
They
the second season
just released the second season, yeah, recently too. Did you have any sort of robot influence? I always ask this of actors who sort of play robots. Did you like, have any voiceover robot inspirations, or any way you approached it, or any
I think
favorite
more
robots?
Than anything? Yeah, I think more than anything, I was thinking of Brent Spiner, because I think that he did a really excellent job making it both an android and somebody that was relatable. So he didn't go too far into it, but always maintained his, the fact that he was what he was and his creation. So that, I guess that was probably my biggest influence.
I know they sort of left you guys hanging when it was canceled. Did you think you were coming back for season 3? And is there any chance that we might get to see a wrap up?
Hold on one second. My dogs are freaking out.
Oh, no worries. It's not Ace, is it?
No. That was a good rap. No, it's my two dogs. They sometimes try to do their job by barking at the neighbor dogs. all right, what was the question again? I'm sorry, one second. When it was canceled.
Yeah, I know they kind of left you hanging there, but was it any chance we could see a wrap up?
Oh, yeah, no, I don't think so. I mean, I think Warner Brothers is pretty much done with it.
Okay.
I don't think that it really got the numbers that they had hoped or planned for. And there's a lot of change at Warner Brothers Animation during that time, and sometimes the show gets caught up in whatever executive is there at the time. Just like any other show, really. I mean, you know, there's a lot of decisions that are made way above the pay grade of both producers and the writers and the actors, and so you never really know what's going on there. I think that was we were more caught up in the politics than anything else. It was a fun show, though.
Where would you like to have seen it gone if it got a season three? Because I know there was a plan. You know, Bob Goodman had a plan in place. He kind of, you know,
yeah.
Because you kind of had a cliffhanger at the end. Where would you like to have seen it gone?
I guess more into deeper into the proving of his innocence and further relationship with the creator. A little bit more like, just sort of confronting the creator more, and then figuring out other androids and other sentient beings, and the idea of living together and what we do and where we go from here. How do the two types of sentient beings coexist? There's interesting ways to go. I was sorry when it went away. At the same time, you know, I hadn't really figured out how good I had it until it was gone. Mm. So, because I was just so used to work coming my way, I didn't really know how lucky I was to get a show. And so at the, my initial response, maybe not would, you know, it would be different now. I'm much more grateful for work now than I was then.
Hmm. Yeah. I guess when you're in the middle of all those different things, you're just focusing on the work, and then all of a sudden you don't realize the politics that are going on behind the scenes.
Yeah. You don't really know what's happening. Yeah.
Boy, one of our favorites, man. Batman, the Brave and the Bold, a completely different take on Batman.
Oh,
What was your background with the character, and then when did you find out about the series?
Well, I love Batman the Animated Series. I'm a big Kevin Conroy fan for a long time. When I went out to meet James, Andrea Romano brought me in. There was just a little bit of copy. At that time, like, Bruce Wayne had voiceovers like of what Batman was thinking, so it was sort of interesting because there was the Bruce Wayne voice and the Batman voice, but then they decided just to go with the Batman voice after a while. The writer Michael Jelenic took us in that direction. He's such a talented guy. Tonally, it was sort of interesting to figure out where we were going, because initially I don't know if I got it, but then the more we did it, I feel like we all got on the same page. I mean, they cast a guy that did comedy so that there was an element of comedy to Batman's every reaction. I think they wanted it to maintain the character of Batman. In other words, be dry, but still have like a strain of comedy in there. I am unabashedly proud of that show. It's probably my favorite role I've ever played. And certainly at that time meant so much to me and my family. I'm ridiculously proud of that show.
Did they seek you out for Batman, or did you find out that they were casting and
I auditioned for it.
Okay.
Yeah, I auditioned for it. Yeah. They saw a bunch of people. I had worked with Andrea on Zeta Project, but I don't think that had that much to do with it. But maybe. I mean, you know, she had worked with me before, and I'm fairly easy to work with, so she might have thought, like, oh, well, you know, put that plug in. But, it was a... but I auditioned just like every other actor.
Okay. Did they ever say anything to you as, like, this is what you did to get the role, to get that, because you got the tone right? Or... did you just sort
no,
of...
No, no one ever...
I'm just... because no, there's all these, like, breaking the fourth wall kind of things where you're like, well, you don't see that every day in the Music Maestro episode. You know, I'm wondering if there was, like, a...
Oh, I love that musical episode. That was really hilarious. That was one of my favorite lines of the whole time, actually. That's funny that you picked that one. You don't see that every day. We just sort of got on the same page by doing it. I mean, I think that's the best way to do it. And then Andrea Romano gave me, like... a CD of the voice and the entirety of the episode, so that I could listen to it and get kind of tonally where what worked and what didn't work. And that was actually kind of interesting, because listening to it pre-animation, but just listening to it in the larger thrust of the narrative, I started honing it down a little more and getting really where they were going, where if you're just going line by line, you might not be able to, because you just shouldn't necessarily try to go for an effect of listening to yourself. So, I mean, you know, she's a really fascinating director. She gets you, she works you, you know, you don't even know that you're being manipulated, but you're taking, in all kinds of different directions, but finally the one that she actually wanted. So that was part of her process.
Not unlike Batman, the animated series, which you referenced, Brave and the Bold had dozens and dozens of incredible guest stars. Any in particular where you had to turn like professional or fanboy Diedrich off and turn professional Diedrich on? Like which ones got you stoked? You're like, oh, I get to be in the studio with so-and-so today.
I was totally stoked to have Julie Newmar on the show. That was really awesome. That was just totally cool. I mean, because when I was a kid, watching her as Catwoman, I just loved watching her run around, and I just thought she was the coolest and the sexiest thing I'd ever seen. And I guess I was like 9 or something. I was like, what is happening with me? Because I just thought she was the coolest and sexiest thing I'd ever seen. So that was really fun. And, you know, just watching the regular actors that we the only regular that we had was Batman, but then there were guest stars that just kept coming back over and over again and played multiple characters, like John DiMaggio, who I'm a big fan of, and just watching Johnny come up with Aquaman and that voice was one of my favorite moments in show business, frankly, because he's a really talented guy, and he came in with one direction, and then Andrea pushed him in another direction, and he took it and ran, and it was... I mean, when you heard it, you were like, oh, that's the thing that should have been happening, like, all time. It was so perfect. It was just so perfect. It was gorgeous. I mean, there was a number of times. You know, every time I'm in a studio with somebody as talented as John or, like, Tom Kinney, I was working with this morning, I just am so blessed to be working with such talent, and I just feel so lucky, because they're just remarkable. So I fanboy on those guys all the time.
You mentioned the Julie Newmar episode. That's Chill of the Night. Also featuring Adam West,
yeah.
Her Batman, Kevin Conroy,
yeah.
Mark Hamill, Richard Mull. Were you all in the studio at the same time, or were there Cummings and
No,
Cummings?
Only okay. Julie Newmar. Everybody else, there was some scheduling problems, so we had to do different things, which I was really disappointed about. Adam West and I had done a series, my first series, called the Danger Theater together. And so I knew Adam from there, and I was looking forward to seeing him, but the scheduling just didn't work out. And of course, Mark Hamill, I wanted to meet Mark Hamill. So subsequently, we've become friends, but I did not meet him at that session.
Okay.
It was just kind of the regular voiceover crowd myself, and that was it. And then later, I came in just to meet Julie. Because that was like a dream come true.
You had to go in for that. That one you showed up,
come
even
on.
Not give. Yeah,
yeah,
well, of course.
On. Yeah, I can find the time for that.
I can't blame you on that one. Did you over the years have you gotten any Batman tips from Adam West or Kevin Conroy?
Oh no, you know, Adam and I, I guess we've just written each other a couple of times, but just more like you're the best and everything like that. But Kevin Conroy and I are friends, and we see each other regularly, and I've kind of become his Robin. We go around and we solve crimes together, and it's fun.
There's a TV show right there. You could do that in the
yeah.
office for whenever, during the summertime, whenever American Housewife is
sure.
on. You mentioned that Chill of the Night episode. Man, that was where it took a tone shift in the series. Because
that was a really interesting episode for us, yeah.
How did you approach that episode compared to other recording sessions? And sort of talk about that scene, too, the confrontation between Bruce Wayne and Joe Chill.
Well, I had an acting teacher at North Carolina School of the Arts, this guy named Yuri Beloff, who was really my mentor more than anybody. And he said that when you start actually thinking like the character, that you've broken through, you've gone to the other side. And that's when you're really, really acting. When his thoughts, his memories, everything becomes yours, you've really become an actor. And it doesn't happen all the time, at least not with me, maybe with other better actors, but not me. And The Chill of the Night was the episode, probably the only episode of voiceover that I've ever done where I actually felt it. Like when he was confronting, his parent killer in that hospital room, I was crying. I couldn't get through it. It was so intense. And I felt everything, and I felt the anger, and I felt the resentment, and I felt the revenge, and then I felt the forgiveness. And it was an amazing journey to go on, and I understood why Lita played Batman are so in love with that character in that moment that I played him, because he is a full round human being. He actually has some addictions, and he's not one thing or the other. And it's he is a fascinating character. And that's when I broke through. So it's interesting that you bring up that episode. Yeah, it was fun because, it was funny because, you know, I was like, really going through this emotional journey. And the other actors were like joking around, and as you do in a regular voiceover session. But for me, I was having like this moment of identity crisis because I was so incredibly into the character in that moment.
The wrap up you did not get with Zeta Project, you got with Batman, Brave and the Bold. When did you know they were wrapping things up? Yeah, about Mightfall. When did you know they were wrapping things up, and when did you first see the script?
I first saw the script about 3 weeks before we actually ended up recording it. But I was very happy when we got our last seasons. I was worried there were rumors that we were going to cancel before that, and we actually had a gap in production where I thought we were going to be canceled. And I have to tell you that, you know, I've had many disappointments in show business, but I was really, really down at that moment because I thought we weren't done. And, you know, the frustration of not being able to finish a story, just like anyone trying to tell a story, you want to get to the end. And I felt we were done, and it was extremely frustrating for me. And I was very, very upset about it. And I was vocal about it because I was like, you know, we're doing a really good show and we haven't hit where we need to get. And very luckily, Warner Brothers and everybody got on the same page and shut that thing up. And we got that fantastic last episode with just a lovely last monologue, something I'm really, really proud of and love. I really love it.
Any chance we can see The Hammers of Justice return as possibly a direct-to-video feature? Have they talked at all?
That would be great. I would love to do that. You know, we'll see. I mean, I'm still around. James is still around. Batman still exists. So, yeah, I mean, you know, definitely when I find out, I will tell you if that happens.
You're definitely doing the comic book thing, man. Guy Gardner, Booster Gold, all these, Kraven the Hunter, all these things. Are you kind of a Marvel guy or a DC guy, or you just like it all?
You know, I drift around to wherever it takes me. I love Batman, so it's all about the character more than anything. And you know, Guy Gardner is just a lot of fun. But I also really like there's a hummingbird. Cool. I also really like being Booster Gold.
They're kind of like that smarmy kind of guy. Yeah, on Justice League Action, you actually got to fight Kevin Conroy's Batman.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And I got to be in sessions with Kevin, which was like a dream come true because I'm a true fan.
Nice.
So that was really awesome.
When he did the line in that episode, because I'm Batman, that's how I can beat you. Did you guys have fun? Like, did you talk about that line?
Yeah, totally. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Actually, we went back and forth where I said, I'm Batman. He went, I'm Batman, like that. So it was pretty fun.
It's all good stuff. Latest projects, American Housewife returns this fall, season 2, correct?
Yes, that's right.
And Big Hero 6, the series, also in the fall. You've got some more voiceover
work
coming up.
Yeah. There's plenty of voiceover work coming up. Big Hero 6 and Miles from Tomorrowland, Milo Murphy's Law, and a couple other things that are bubbling along that I'm not allowed to talk about yet, but I will when I can.
And we'll find out about them on social media. Where are you at on? Are you on Twitter, Facebook?
I'm on Twitter under Bader Diedrich, I think, or Diedrich Bader. Anyway, you do a search, you probably
find. You're out there. We'll put the link up in the show notes. I'm telling you, Diedrich, we are looking forward to those shows. Again, congrats on season 2. Thank you for talking all things Batman with us today on Comic Book Central. Much appreciated.
Yeah, it was really fun, and thank you for working with my absolutely crazy schedule. I really appreciate it.
No worries at all.
Thank you for having me on the show. I'm a fan, and so I'm really looking forward to listening to it myself.
Thank you so much. You can catch up on season 1 of American Housewife on ABC's official website. And you can follow Diedrich on Twitter at Bader_Diedrich. I'm going to put that link in the show notes for this episode at my website, comicbookcentral.net. Don't forget, Zeta Project, Batman, Brave and the Bold, complete seasons. Warner Brothers has got them. You can find them at wbshop.com. Go get them. Great series. I'm going to put that link in the show notes as well. Again, huge bat thanks to Diedrich Bader for parking the Batmobile at the Lair today and hanging out for a chat. Don't forget, folks, if you want to keep up with each and every episode of Comic Book Central, you can do so at the website, or better yet, subscribe to the show on iTunes. You will not miss a moment of the fun that's headed your way. So many good episodes on tap. You do not want to miss a moment. And I want to hear from you. Tell me your thoughts. Want to tell me what you thought of today's show, Batman the Brave and the Bold. It's a great series. Let me know your favorite episodes. Past episodes of Comic Book Central, if you want to talk to me about those. Guest ideas for future episodes. Your thoughts on Wonder Woman. I want to hear it all. TV series, movie, tell me what you think. Drop me a line, joe@comicbookcentral.net, or you can click the Signal Me tab on the website, comicbookcentral.net. All right, that's it for today, kids. Time to head on out of here. I think I'll go binge watch me some episodes of Marine Boy. It's show does sound cool. I think I'm going to go check it out. But don't worry, I won't be gone long. I have got to get back to the Lair soon, because next week on Comic Book Central, he's written classic tales of some of our favorite TV heroes, including the $6 Million Man and the Bionic Woman, and his action flicks, including 48 Hours, Commando, The Running Man, and Die Hard, have combined to make billions at the box office. Writer, producer, director Steven D'Souza will be here to chat about action, adventure, and comic books, of course. That's what's coming your way next week. Until then, keep being your bat-tastic self, keep reading those comics, and thanks for joining me here in the Lair. Comic Book Central, where comic books come to life. This podcast is intended for entertainment and education purposes only. All original content of this podcast is the intellectual property of Comic Book Central and is licensed under Creative Commons Attribution, Non-Commercial, No Derivations 3.0 imported license. All of the content and names are registered trademarks and copyrights of the respective holders.
So, this is really it?
Yeah, looks like. At least you can say you had a good run.
A great run. And until we meet again, boys and girls, know that wherever evil lurks, in all its myriad forms, I'll be there with the hammers of justice to fight for decency and defend the innocent. Good night.